Kumi Naidoo, thanks so much for being with us, South African human rights and environmental justice activist, president of the Fossil Fuel Treaty Initiative, speaking to us from Santa Marta, Colombia. And that does it for the show. I'm in Toronto for the Hot Docs Film Festival, where the new documentary about Democracy Now! Steal the Story, Please! Is being featured in the festival's Big Ideas program. I'll be joining one of the film's directors, Tia Lesson, for a conversation with the award-winning Canadian journalist and filmmaker Michelle Shepherd tonight in Chicago, in Toronto. Juan will be in Chicago tomorrow.
This land we love belongs to all of us. Yet not everyone is treated equally. Right now, millions of Americans are fighting for the things promised to all by the Constitution. Freedom, justice, equality. The ACLU is leading the fight to protect our civil liberties. Together, we can protect and advance our rights nationwide. Because we the people means all of us.
This plan was made for you and me.
Learn how the ACLU is defending the right to vote, free speech, and other civil liberties at myaclu.org.
It's 6 o'clock, and you're listening to radio station WUSB in Stony Brook, broadcasting at 90.1 FM, 107.3 FM, and over the Internet at WUSB.FM. It's Tuesday evening, which means it's time for another edition of Off the Wall. It's another Tuesday evening. This means another exciting edition of Off the Wall. Emmanuel over here. Kyle over there.
Yeah, hi.
Well, okay. I'm kind of torn tonight between talking about what everybody is talking about and talking about gardening, because, you know, that's really better. It's better to talk about gardening and just compare stories and look at the progress that's going on. We have tulips. We have tulips that came up. We have daffodils.
There's other things, too. Yeah, older rose bushes that were planted, I think, around 5 years ago, maybe? 4 years ago?
Yeah, and they surprisingly keep coming back.
Yeah, there's a section that needs some work, I guess. They have to be trimmed and raked around and maybe put some mulch back after that, and I don't know. But
you made a big pile of mulch today.
Well, it's actually composting leaves. There's not a lot of green. It's mostly brown and, like, some branches. It was really kind of looking sad, and it hadn't been turned in a while. If anybody's wondering, it's the Berkeley method of composting.
What does that mean? Berkeley, California?
I don't know. I think it may have origins in some agricultural programs out there. I can't remember. I looked it up, and it was sort of the simplest way to start doing that. So I got my pitchfork. You know, I needed that for all kinds of things. So my tines are nice and sharp, and I'm out there turning it. But I kind of fell off after the fall. Like, I raked a little bit, and then so I went back out there and actually found some, like, rotting logs and then a bunch of branches and put that down in the new area that I was going to start piling it up. And it's on a slope, so it's really uneven and not a great area, but it's sort of on the far end of the fenced garden. And, yeah, just started piling it up on top of the branches because I wanted to have, like, a little bit of air in the bottom. I don't want it to get too slimy. And I don't know if that's exactly correct, but I don't have, like, a bunch of, like, a purpose-built area where I can move the pile from one place to another that's, like, kind of got walls on it. I don't have anything like that, but I figured I'd improvise a little bit. So it's raised a little bit, so it'll drain a little bit. Because, anyway, that was my base, and it actually leveled it out a little bit, too. And, yeah, so I just restacked it, but then, like, did some more raking. But that's really what it is, just, like, tidying up and observing stuff and
using your instincts.
Yeah, kind of, like, internally making note of, like, okay, I'll try to get to that. Mm-hmm. I'm glad I did all the, like, fence repairs and things earlier on. And, yeah, just being, like, more proactive than I was last year. And I want to do more stuff. Like, I have all kinds of ambitions. I was talking to you about doing, like, a little miniature green roof and that kind of thing for certain areas. And
actually growing things on the roof.
Why not?
Okay.
They do it all over in urban environments. And
That's true. They do.
There's purpose-built setups. You could build, like, little things. And, I mean, there's areas of our gutters that are growing things better than our flower beds.
It actually protects the roof because you have something above the roof.
That's kind of what I was thinking. And there's some soft spots in the area that I would use and other stuff going on. So I was thinking about, like, how would I arrange this and, like, maybe build, like, a little area. So I'd, like, lift it and then put some trays down or, like, put some pond material down.
It's amazing, though. Talking about gardening, you know, we spend a lot of time in the city as well, New York City, and people are passionate about their gardens there, too. And the gardens may just be a little plot of land between two apartment buildings. It might be something on their roof. It might be in a common park. But people really take it seriously, and it's so therapeutic to be out there with the plants. I mean, you know, we did something different this year, or actually last year. We planted bulbs. I knew about bulbs, but we never actually did it before. I wanted something to come up in the spring, daffodils, tulips, and they came up. And not only did they come up, they bloomed. We have blooming flowers, never had blooming flowers this early in the season. And they're going to come up every year. You can't stop it now. And, you know, I noticed that there are daffodils coming up in the forest. And you're wondering, why are daffodils in the middle of the forest? Somebody planted them at some point. Many times, it's a relic of an old homestead from a century ago. The house is gone, but the flowers keep coming up year after year. I mean, how much more amazing can it possibly be? Just to put something in the ground, forget about it over the winter, and then it comes up year after year. There's nothing better than that.
Yeah, and I mean, you're talking locally in the city, and I just know, I think when we travel, we observe that stuff, and I think many people have this experience, but you're always looking and seeing how people are using different spaces, how it's built into some of the civil engineering and the urban design, but also you bring it back to your own space and you're like, oh wow, what is going on? You know, cause you got lots of stuff to do but the more you're out there and stuff, I think it's just, you find it rewarding in different ways. I've got all kinds of different things, just setting up irrigation and then getting the timer going. Like there's all kinds of fittings and plumbing you got to do. You don't want leaks because then you're wasting water.
Right.
And, you know, it'd be great to have stored rainwater and do all kinds of other elaborate things. But it's just about, like, breaking it down piece by piece. Like, just fixing fences was great.
Fences are important to keep deer and groundhogs out. Because
especially in this area.
They're destructive. And you know, it's good to have, chicken wire that we use?
Turkey wire.
I think
that's the term of art. Yeah.
What's the difference between chicken wire and turkey wire? Do they know which fence is for them?
I think it's very similar. It's similar in shape and size to what you would get for chicken wire. Maybe chicken wire is a thinner gauge or something. But be that as it may, I don't have a lot. We don't have a lot of edible stuff or like raised beds or anything like that.
We're not even talking about growing food.
I mean, it'd be great to have just some like. Some herbs, you know, or like a little section. I want to get better at indoor plants too, and you know, different spaces. And it's just, you start thinking about it, and you get so many ideas. Mm-hmm. You're like, oh, I got to do this, I got to do that. You get inspired, and from like I said, going back to it, travels and all kinds of different things. So, but then having the initiative to actually plan a certain plot or a certain space. We have another. Area I'd looked at and fenced that, and you know, just doing those things get you to the area that you might add something to. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of work, it's like I said, it's rewarding.
You're doing the bulk of the work. You're out there in the morning doing all kinds of tilling but it is therapeutic though. I mean, it feels good, right? When you see something coming up.
Well, especially in the springtime, because I think that's when everything else that's not really being tended to emerges, and
right.
I just you get the itch, the green thumb, I guess, and. In years past, I've done a lot more. I have a lot of seeds I've stored. I've got a whole jar of pumpkin seeds. I don't know if they're going to do anything, but...
Well, they're going to grow a pumpkin patch if you plant them.
Right, right. What I was thinking about doing is I've got this itch for native... I was talking about this the other week, native species. So I'm thinking I'm going to do... I found some that are okay in partial shade, but not native or something like that. I think I'm going to get a small package of some native New York stuff. And then another package of, partial that are shade-loving. And just mix it all together.
Mm-hmm.
I was reading up on tips like adding sand for wildflowers. And I don't really know
adding sand?
Yeah, it helps you spread it, apparently.
Okay.
I don't know. I was trying to, like, figure out what that's all about.
We have a lot of sand on Long Island, so that would be beneficial.
Yeah. And, like, certain grasses that go well with large wildflower beds, and I don't really know where I want to do it. If I want to do it around the perimeter, or if I want to put it in specific spots, but that's a whole other issue that I've been thinking about. And
we went to a nursery yesterday, actually.
That was really cool, wasn't it?
I didn't know it was so big. You know, we walked in. Usually, we just go into the front area, but if you make a turn and keep walking, you're in the fields. And they have these greenhouses. They have a whole greenhouse filled with rose bushes of various sorts, other kinds of flowers, and there's just people wandering around, and we heard some kind of animal inside one of the barns. And you realize, wow, these places are all over, you know, the area.
Oh, we're really lucky here. This this hardiness zone, this growing zone, mm-hmm. and yeah, there's all kinds of different spots and things going on. And like I said, be inspired. That's what gets me this time of year.
And what's really amazing too for this year is there's a TV program that just came out. It's on Netflix called This is a Gardening Show. I'm not kidding. That's the name of the show. This is a Gardening Show. If you have Netflix, I can't recommend it strongly enough. It's only 15 minutes long. There's only, I think, 6 episodes. But, boy, is it funny and inspirational if you're into gardens.
Yeah, Zach Galifianakis, I think is how you pronounce his name. Fantastic. Just a comedian, but talking about something he's passionate about. And it's a great, just overview and rundown of different topics, different types of things to grow, mainly food.
Mm-hmm.
And I would love to get better at that, but what I realize is your space, how it's organized, how accessible things are. Like I always talk about being on a slope. That's kind of hard to work, but plenty of things are on slopes, like, you know, rice and stuff like that. You know, uh-huh. There's lots of things that grow in different strange environments. You can do a lot with space, and New York especially those urban gardens. I love those on the corners and in different communities, community spaces where people are gardening. This time of year, it's probably quite busy, and all over the country, there's spots like that. And in other parts of the world, people are growing and trying to do a little bit of subsistence, or just, you know, just see how well they can do growing something. I love cooking, and it would be cool to have a little herb garden if I'm going to do anything edible. But I haven't had a lot of luck with that, and that's why I'm trying to bolster the basics of, like, compost, you know, what's going on with soil, and, like, how things are separated, and irrigation. Like, you need all of those things. If you're going to really try to go for it, you have to have that kind of well understood. And when you see like those bulbs come up, it's like, wow, I did a good job. You have this sort of sense of accomplishment that you were able to turn the soil, get it going, and create a habitat for some life to emerge.
It's yeah. Just going back to that show, though, it's just something different but perfect. The intro, okay, they use this a song that you might have heard. It sounds very familiar. Something in the Air by a band called Thunderclap Newman, and I know many people haven't heard of that band, but it's worth listening to. And it's the intro where you have all kinds of kind of psychedelic images, caterpillars crawling and gardens and forests and things like that. You couldn't get a more perfect intro than that. And it just sets the tone. For some reason, this guy filmed the series next to an elementary school. And he spends some time interviewing kids about gardens, vegetables, fruit. And it's amazing to see the reactions, how they react to his nonsensical questions, their knowledge of gardening,
and preferences,
just their sense of humor, which extends to when he's talking to crusty old farmers. It's inspirational. I can't come up with more words than that.
Yeah. And people have this like proximity to, especially food and things that you grow that you can consume, and it's really cool to see how relatable it is. And you're talking about food and you're talking about growing stuff and the learning of the skill of tending to a garden is, I think it informs a lot of other aspects of nurturing life around you in our sort of quasi-industrial or super industrial society.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it just sort of returning to that for the fun of it, or the fresh air or the beautification or all of it, maybe getting some food out of it as well.
And just getting away from pressures and insanity and negativity.
It's a good place to like planting, like to talk and have conversations and yeah, just do some, it's a healthy, healthy diversion.
Mm-hmm.
And, I don't know. I can't say enough about it. I could go on and on all hour.
And we want to. We really do want to because it's such a positive type of thing. But, you know, it's a reminder that no matter how crazy things get, there's always something positive to gravitate towards. And hopefully here at WUSB, which I really hope you're supporting by going to WUSB.FM and pledging whatever you can afford, I hope you realize the importance of a place like this where you can hear a song or you can hear a perspective or just all kinds of different things that you might not be exposed to normally here at 90.1 and 107.3. So, that's how we try to stay sane, listening to a lot of alternative radio and getting out in the garden and breathing fresh air and taking long walks and things like that. They're all therapeutic.
Yeah, and it's all connected, and it can be make for a really good outlook and a really good sense of self and sense of the world.
Now, speaking of all connected, we're talking about gardening.
Plus, it's all so trippy. It's so weird.
It is.
It's just crazy weird. That's the one thing I like about that show.
We're talking about gardening, and of course, through gardens, you get ingredients for all kinds of food dishes. Salad, for instance. Do you know what a burrata salad is? I don't know what a burrata salad is. I've heard that phrase a lot in the last couple of days. But there's all kinds of salads, so many kinds of salads. And apparently, a burrata salad is what they were serving on Saturday night.
That was the salad, huh?
At the White House Correspondents' Dinner.
And oh, that sounds good.
We're going to focus on that salad for the rest of the hour because that is what's really important here is what people were being fed. You know how much food,
what a transition.
How much food was wasted on Saturday night? What did they do with all the food? That's what I want to know. Did they at least donate it to somebody? I saw that woman taking all the bottles of wine. Apparently she was going back up to her room with that and going to have a little private party or something. But, yeah, okay. okay, so let's talk about the guy. This guy, his name is Michael Glantz, and he is an agent at Creative Artist Agency. If you're looking for representation, this might be a good person to contact. It was chaos inside the Washington Hilton Ballroom Saturday night, as you might have heard, but not for him, not for Michael. He stayed in his chair picking at a burrata salad as the people around him ducked for cover. Again, he's a top agent at Creative Artist Agency. He was a guest at the White House Correspondents' Dinner. I understand he's Wolf Blitzer's agent. He said there was no way he was going to hit the deck like everybody else, even though he heard the gunfire from outside the ballroom. In a brief interview on Sunday, Mr. Glantz said that he was unfazed by the commotion and that he wanted to see what was happening. I'm a New Yorker, he said. We live with sirens and activity happening all the time. I wasn't scared. There were hundreds of Secret Service agents hurtling themselves over tables and chairs, and I wanted to watch. I love this guy because he's everything that we all believe in and want to do, and he did it right. And somehow he wound up on TV. He was in the corner, lower left corner of everybody's coverage of the chaos, and there he was just calmly finishing the salad while everybody else is, like, sprawled out on the floor. Anyway, the split screen was captured on CNN, and the footage of Mr. Glantz quickly went viral on social media, where he was dubbed the Salad Man. I bet you could talk about gardening with him for a good hour or two. Should get him on the show. A lot of people said, why didn't you get on the floor? Everybody else at your table and in the room was on the floor. He was happy to explain. First of all, I have a bad back. I couldn't get on the floor. And if I did get on the floor, they'd have to bring in people to get me off the floor. And number two, I'm a hygiene freak. There is no freaking way I was getting in my new tux on the dirty Hilton floor. It was not happening. Oh, thank you, New York Times, for that perspective there. That was the happiest event of that night, I think. Okay, so, it was nuts. It was pandemonium. We saw it unfold kind of live, kind of looking over it over the next few days. I have to say, when it happened, I felt this kind of collective, what's the word? Just everybody was getting through it together. And there was no longer one side versus another side. You know, there was the administration, there was the press, there was everybody else watching what was going on. It felt like a healing moment. It really did, because you saw people as human beings. And, you know, you felt for them. You didn't want anybody to be afraid. You didn't want anybody to get hurt. And it was a relief to know that nobody did get hurt. Well, actually, a Secret Service agent was shot, but I understand it was in their bulletproof vest, so it wasn't a serious injury, if it was even an injury. So, you know, a horrible situation like that, best possible outcome, I suppose. It didn't last, though. It really didn't last. We were watching 60 Minutes the day after, and there was an interview with the reporter Nora, I don't know her last name. Do you?
I thought Nora, I want to say Jones. I don't
know.
No, it's
not
You're
Jones.
Putting me on the spot.
Well, I'm on the spot. Nora. I put myself on the spot first. I'm sorry, I don't know the names of the reporters on CBS. But anyway, it was a well-known reporter, and she was asking, you know, various questions, and Trump was basically doing his best, I think, to answer these questions. And I was saying to you, Kyle, at the time, that this isn't the same person. He seems rational. He seems like a nice guy, you know? And you told me it wasn't going to last. And it didn't last, did it?
No, it didn't.
So, yeah, it got to the point where she started quoting the guy who wrote some kind of manifesto. And when she got to the part where he said something about not allowing pedophiles to run the government or something like that, that is when he just lost it completely. First of all, his name was not spoken. He just assumed they were talking about him. Then he just launched into this tirade against reporters, against her in particular, against all these awful people, and you realized, no, that is the person we saw before that is not the person that we are going to get in the end. It just didn't last. And you realize just what awful people they really are. You know? And since then, the hatred, the vengeance, the actions, they have basically taken front and center stage, and it's kind of frightening. I've got a few examples of that, but you see it the same way, right?
Yeah, that pretty much sums it up. The way I observed it, there's a lot of animosity that they want to direct at political enemies, and that's just all it is. And I don't really feel qualified so much to, I don't know. I don't have much else to say about it. Like, yeah, that's their attitude.
Uh-huh.
And
yeah, I hear you. I mean, we all feel the same way.
What do you want me to say? I mean, you laid it out.
No, I don't want you to say anything. I want you to...
I don't... What could I possibly add?
We all have unique perspectives on this.
Really irritated.
Yeah. And it's more than him. It's more than him. There are a lot of really... I hesitate to say the word evil, but these are evil people that are basically taking advantage of an unfortunate situation to attack those people that they dislike or are wary of in one form or another. Front and center, and I saw this at the news conference yesterday, is Jimmy Kimmel again. You know, the late night host. Apparently, he told a joke a couple of days earlier where he referred to Melania Trump as an expectant widow. And that, to them, actually, I don't believe that they think that was an actual threat, because nobody responded to it until Monday morning. At least that's the first time I saw any indication that anybody was viewing this as something serious. But basically, it was a joke told. I mean, okay, Trump is what, 80? And Melania is 56? We checked 50. Yeah, she's getting up there. She won't like hearing that. But yeah, 56. But still significantly younger than Trump. And so, you know, ask yourself, why would somebody that much younger marry somebody that much older? Unless, you know, there was something in it for them, and they're just counting the days until they become a widow and become very, very rich. You know, expect it. It's a joke. Maybe it's not a good joke. Maybe it's, you know, it's not that funny, but it's the kind of joke you tell for people in the public eye. You know, watch SNL UK, you know, the Saturday Night Live that they have in the United Kingdom now. And you will see how brutal they are when telling jokes about their political leaders. They do not hold back, and neither should we. And that's exactly what Jimmy Kimmel did. And what this administration is doing is they're targeting him, saying that he somehow bore responsibility for this attempted assassination, if it even is proven that that's what this was, that this joke somehow is getting people to hop on trains, go cross country with guns, and try and take out the president. Yeah, it's absolutely crazy. They have put pressure on ABC to fire him. And fortunately, you know, watching his show last night, he doubled down, you know, as he should. When somebody comes after you and attacks your right to freedom of speech, which basically is what this whole dinner on Saturday night was supposed to be celebrating, when somebody tries to take that away from you, you have to double down. You have to say, no, that's I'm not going to be intimidated by you. It's just not right. Well, George Clooney is speaking out in defense of Jimmy Kimmel after Trump's latest attempt to get ABC to fire him. Again, in Trump's words, Kimmel's despicable call to violence is how he describes that joke. Basically, he compared the backlash to another pre-dinner remark that was taken out of context. This one was basically saying that tonight at this dinner, shots are going to be fired. Well, that's a horrible joke, if that's even funny at all. How could you say something like that? I mean, boy, if you're going to take anything seriously, this is an actual depiction of shots being fired in a place where shots were indeed fired. Well, you know who said that? Carolyn Leavitt, the White House press secretary. That was her joke. She made that joke. That's not considered at all bad or a call for violence. It's not. It's just a silly joke. No big deal. Well, the way it works now is it depends who says what. And if the person that's your enemy says something, it gets taken in a very different context than if somebody else were to say the same thing. For instance, remember Jim Comey, former FBI director? Today, just a couple of hours ago, he was actually charged with threatening the president. They're going after everybody now who has even the slightest critique against this administration. They got a new indictment against James Comey over a social media post. Do you remember the social media post? The one that said, what was it, 8647? It was combining the slang term 86, which is basically a term that means dismiss or remove. I mean, we see that term in bars and restaurants, right, Kyle? You know, we're familiar with it.
Yeah, 86 means to ban them or not allow them back.
Yeah, like if you're 86 from a bar, it means you're kicked out of the bar.
Or a club or something. Yeah.
Well, they've decided to make it mean kill. You know, I don't know how many people have ever used 86 to mean kill somebody. I never saw it in The Sopranos, and you'd think you would see it there. But Comey took a picture of seashells, literally seashells on a beach that were arranged to say 8647. And they have determined that that meant that he, the former FBI director, was threatening to kill Donald Trump. And today, literally today, you know, so shortly after this incident on Saturday, they have decided to come after it. Now, they've been trying to indict Comey for a while, and it's never worked. So now they're trying this. And it's just, it's insane. You look at the reaction, and nobody believes there's any merit to this at all, that Comey did knowingly and willfully make a threat to take the life of and to inflict bodily harm upon the President of the United States, as the document says. Senator Dick Durbin of Illinois denounced the case as a sign that the Justice Department's leaders are desperate to continue to appease Donald Trump by appealing to his worst instincts and need for petty retribution. Thing is, you know, Comey wasn't even really his enemy. You know, he decided he was his enemy, but Comey kind of put him in office, you know, by investigating Hillary Clinton so close to the election back in 2016. And, apparently he didn't bow down deep enough to have Trump not hate him. Anyway, when Comey learned of the uproar after sending the picture on social media, he deleted the post, saying he didn't know it had a violent connotation and that he opposed violence of any kind. There's nothing to indicate that's not true. No past behavior or statements or anything like that. The Secret Service interviewed him by phone that very evening, and Comey said he had no intent to cause the president harm. He sat for an in-person interview the next day, and the Justice Department dropped the matter. But guess what? They just brought it up again because, well, they're angry about what happened Saturday. And that's not all. That's not all. The Justice Department basically took on Trump's voice. According to the New York Times, adopting Trump's voice, Justice Department asks judge to let the ballroom proceed. Now, okay, that's something else that Republicans and Fetterman have been advocating for after Saturday. Is that, oh, this is proof? We have to have a ballroom. We have to have a ballroom because you can't have events like this in a hotel like we've always done because this kind of thing will happen. Okay, you know, we can scare ourselves out of any place where people gather. You know, we can say it's not safe to go to malls, it's not safe to go to schools, it's not safe to be on the street. Everything has to be in a fortified building. And there are people who will live that way, that's for sure. But the White House Correspondents' Dinner is an annual event that basically invites all of the people who cover the White House to gather together and celebrate what they do. It's run by that organization. It's not run by the White House. And, you know, that's what nobody seems to be getting. They're saying, oh, yeah, we have to build the ballroom. We have to have this event in the ball. If you do that, then it's not the White House Correspondents Association hosting the event. It's Trump hosting the event, which obviously is something he wants. He wants to be able to control the media. But it's weird to see all these people saying, yeah, this is proof. We have to have it in a secure location, but not realizing that this is basically a takeover attempt of that organization. And it's, you know, it's scary to see that. So today, Justice Department has been pretty busy. Actually, this happened late yesterday. They basically wrote this in Trump's, according to the New York Times, Trump's recognizable online voice explicitly linking the security breach at the White House Correspondents' Dinner to the lawsuit over the president's ballroom project. The motion signed by the acting attorney general, Todd Blanche, who we've seen a lot on TV lately, submitted by Stanley Woodward Jr., attacks litigation against the ballroom the same way Mr. Trump has on social media. It asked Judge Richard J. Leon to backtrack and allow construction on the project to continue. Because it is Donald J. Trump, a highly successful real estate developer who has abilities that others don't, especially those who assume the office of president, this frivolous and meritless lawsuit was filed. This is according to the Justice Department. Again, it's called Trump Derangement Syndrome, all caps. This is from the Justice Department. It's like Trump has taken over the Justice Department. It is scary to me, disgusting, to see the way people suck up to him when they are in his presence. They have to compliment him. It's like being in North Korea. It literally is. I never thought I'd see that in this country. I never thought I'd see people cave so easily and just say what's expected of them without thinking for themselves. But here you have an entire department, the Justice Department, caving and speaking like this. What's next? Okay, well, today the FCC ordered a review of all station licenses owned by ABC. Yeah, which is an extraordinary move to pressure a major television network whose programming has frequently angered Donald Trump. Don't think this is not related to Jimmy Kimmel. They are actually trying to take away the licenses of ABC stations because they have not fired him yet. And I guarantee if they fire him, this will go away. Trump's FCC chairman, I like the way the New York Times phrased this because he is Trump's chairman, Brendan Carr has repeatedly threatened to take action against broadcasters, including taking away their valuable station licenses. His agency's actions on Tuesday was the first direct step towards potentially doing so. It's extremely difficult for the government to take away stations' rights to broadcast. It must be able to make a convincing case that the stations had shown a pattern of violating rules and regulations. And even if the FCC ultimately decides to block the renewal of ABC station licenses, the network will have ample resources in the courts, and it would be able to continue to broadcast as the fight played out. That's if they have any integrity. Now, the feds have never before ordered such a sweeping review of a major television network's licenses, which allow the companies to broadcast in local markets. All told, ABC owns 8 of the more than 200 local stations that carry its programming across the country. Doesn't sound like much, but it includes New York, Los Angeles, Philadelphia, big markets. ABC's parent company is the Walt Disney Company, which I know is absurd in and of itself. They said in a statement they had long complied with FCC rules and that it was confident that record demonstrates our continued qualifications as licensees under the Communications Act and the First Amendment and are prepared to show that through the appropriate legal channels. But lately we have not seen big corporations exercise much in the way of integrity. So this is something to be worried about because if they succeed here, there's really no limit. There's really no limit to what they will try to do. Now, under normal FCC protocol, ABC doesn't have to apply to renew any of its station licenses until 2028. They run on 8-year terms, and Trump will be coming to the end of his presidency. But there's a little-used provision of the law that allows the FCC to force stations to apply for renewal of their licenses at any time. Yeah, so they can just say, nope, you got to renew tomorrow. And guess what? We're not going to grant you the renewal. I'm telling you, it's pretty scary. It's pretty scary. This is why we want to talk about gardening, because it's a lot more relaxing than seeing this, but
yeah, I just think to myself, like, what are you going, what are we going to do about any of this? And I cannot help but feel despondent and despair. I'm sorry. I think a lot of people are trying to survive. And I think that's part of what we were talking about, is that you might need to know how to grow things. Like, it sounds crazy, but what doesn't right now? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it may bring you some joy and teach you a vital survival skill.
First of all, it's not crazy in the slightest. It's exactly what, you know, that's instinct. Like, that's survival instinct right
as
there.
As we've observed, things are getting worse. So, mm-hmm. to what end? Like, there's an inability to get, like, parts, and the supply chains are broken. Things are too costly. At what point this is going to really hit everybody? I mean, in successive waves, or just things will be hard until they're impossible?
Yeah.
All of a sudden.
Well, I mean, craziest things are for people like us. I imagine the people in charge right now are having a difficult time as well. Look, we're at war against a different country now. The economy is in something I can't say, but it's in a bad place. People are not happy, and popularity ratings are as low as they've ever been.
Yeah, I just remembered one of my reactions to the whole thing this weekend, because of in that interview, the president was saying basically, like, trying to divert blame. And I thought to myself, okay, nice try with the scapegoat, but, like, this is your tough guy America.
Mm-hmm.
Look what it begets. Look at all your hardline policies. And you've had the third attempt on your life? That's how well it's going. Like, we've had other policies on crime. And he's like, he was saying that somebody's soft on crime. I don't know who it was.
The Pope is soft on crime.
The Pope, the journalists. It's just like, okay, but look what being hard on crime is getting you. And not much. So I find it so laughable to witness those attempts at diverting blame,
mm-hmm.
when, you know, this is his policy. These are the things that are occurring under those conditions. This working environment sucks for a lot of people, even the president. I'm really sorry to hear about it, you know, but that's what this policy is getting us.
First of all, he's not hard on crime.
No,
he's
full of it.
He is a hypocrite on crime, because if the crime involves people that are friends with him, they get pardoned. You know, January 6th, or people who steal millions of dollars and are you know, compatriots of him, they won't see a day of punishment. But if it's somebody that he doesn't like, then, you know, a bunch of seashells on a beach literally can get you imprisoned. You know, we're talking about the stuff of dictators here. And this country is not supposed to tolerate that kind of thing. And it's just, you know, Trump is a cancer. There is no question about that. But the people who enable this cancer to spread and don't do anything about it, they are the true culprits, because they have the power, or they had the power. And here they are just letting it run rampant. And, yeah, it's a terrible, terrible thing to witness. And, yeah, he should be 86th. And I mean that the way it was written. 86th, the guy, out of his office. One way or another, if we have to wait for, November to basically take away his power.
The how.
If we have to go into the streets,
yeah.
Whatever.
It's less consequential by the day.
Nobody I know, and nobody I know of, advocates for violence or what that lunatic did in the hotel. And speaking of that, what exactly was that lunatic doing? he was in a room adjacent to the ballroom, or maybe it was downstairs or upstairs. It was upstairs because they were in the basement. All right, so they have some kind of detector. So this guy goes through the detector with his guns? I mean, I guess maybe he charged through. I've never tried this, but in the airport, when you go through the metal detector and all that, I guess you could have a gun on you and just charge through there, but they're probably going to chase you and tackle you, which is what happened there. So, okay, that's kind of what's supposed to happen, right? You're supposed to make sure people don't get through with weapons. This guy charged through, whether or not he had a weapon, that's very suspicious, and he was brought down. Not killed, as they were reporting. Yeah, it's weird to watch live TV when something like this is happening, because it was verified that the assailant was dead. And, of course, he's not. I wonder if he actually fired shots. This is something I've been saying from the beginning, because in situations like this, the situation is always reported in one way, which tends to be, oh, there's multiple shooters, then it's only one shooter, then the guy didn't actually fire a shot. I don't know. You know, the story does tend to change. So just keep an eye on that. It's quite likely he fired his weapon. It just seems, running at that speed, if you see the video, how was he able to take a shotgun and shoot it? I mean, he has to stop and aim it at somebody. Or are we talking about friendly fire? It doesn't really matter that much. It was a chaotic scene. I don't think anybody can be blamed if it was friendly fire. But let's get the story right. Let's report what actually happened. And the other thing, you know, I noticed this. I was watching BBC, and they were reporting that Trump shared video of the guy running through the metal detector. Trump shared video? It's his video? I mean, you know, the video came from various sources, security cameras, reporters, people's phones. I don't know. Trump has this obsession with being the one to report news that's already out there. But, you know, the media doesn't have to give that to him. They don't have to say, Trump said this. Okay, maybe he said that, but we already knew that. You know, so it's just all these little weird things get to me where we give him power he doesn't deserve. He has enough power, and we need to push back and not be afraid to push back. I mean, look, this is the guy who I want to read this. This was, I think, last year. Do you remember Trump threatened a congressman? Seditious behavior from traitors, he said. Lock them up. Yeah, insurrection, treason, hang them. George Washington would. Hang them. That's a call for violence if I've ever heard one. And what was this in response to? This was in response to lawmakers saying that military should not carry out illegal orders. I mean, it's probably in the handbook. But, yeah, duh, that's exactly what you're not supposed to do in the military, is carry out illegal orders. It shouldn't be a problem. But his reaction to that was to threaten them with death.
Well, he whined and squealed about that like you would not believe.
Oh, I believe.
Real uncomfortable. Shrieked so bad. Like, just could not handle that advice being, you know, publicly aired by people with, actually, you know, their own authority and credibility. And I think it's aged just fine. I think, in fact, there are more calls for just that kind of discretion. It has not become less relevant in the last several months. I'm sure everyone's doing a fine job, you know, following their orders, but I can't help but think, you know, that is definitely still worth repeating, and it is being repeated in various opinion pieces, and other individuals have echoed that sentiment a full, whatever, year later.
This guy has no right, as far as I'm concerned, to be pointing fingers at people and accusing them of advocating violence for taking a picture of seashells or for telling a joke on TV about age difference between his wife and him that they choose to interpret in a particular way. Or how about this? Do you remember when Robert Mueller passed away not too long ago? Trump's message of condolence? Good. I'm glad he's dead. Get the hell out of here. You have absolutely no right to be saying these things and casting aspersions on anyone else. You bring it on yourself, and you encourage it, and you're responsible for more violence than all of your opponents put together ever could be. I mean, you know, you're talking about assassinations, celebrating when you kill people on boats, when you destroy civilian infrastructure. It's disgusting. It is absolutely disgusting. And it's just my hope that one day, you meet justice and that somebody has the guts to introduce you to it. And now this. Sorry, John Oliver Moon. No, but I do have some good news, Kyle. I do have some good news to make you feel better. BP's profit has more than doubled as U.S. gas prices have hit their highest point. Someone explain this to me. Nobody can explain this to me.
You know how much it costs to fill up a gas station? It's like $30,000,
$40,000
every
2 weeks. Well, maybe that's what they're bringing in. But okay, the prices went up immediately as soon as we started bombing Iran. And then there was, remember that day or two where it looked like peace might break out? The prices didn't go down right away. No, they kept going up. And now it turns out that the oil companies are making more money than ever. Shouldn't they be hurting? I mean, if everybody is hurting, aren't they part of everybody? You know, there's always somebody who will explain it to me and say, oh, no, that's not how it works, you know, because this is how the economy is set up. And no, I'm sorry. That's wrong then. All right. It's set up wrong. They should be suffering as much as individuals should be suffering. And if they're not, then fix it so they are.
What on earth are you talking about? These are oil companies.
I know they're oil companies.
They are not. This is not some cozy little, like, mom-and-pop operation. These are multinational firms with zero interest in your well-being.
Well, I
they
intend to change that.
They care about profits. Like, and that's... No, this captive, they are cartels, oil cartels.
The way you say that makes it makes it sound negative, and it doesn't have to be. They could be good cartels. They could be, you know, family-owned cartels. Oh, wait, that sounds evil, too. You know what? This ain't cool, and I don't think it's going to work well to their advantage. And I think we have to realize how much power we actually have. Keep asking questions. Keep challenging the authorities and keep saying what's on your mind. That is what matters more than anything.
Yeah, and when people run around flaunting their riches, you know, find out, like, from them, like, how'd you get your money? Who'd you kill?
I was mistaken. What matters more than anything is that you go to WUSB.FM and pledge whatever you can afford to keep this radio station going so we can continue to use our voices, like, most of the country seems to be afraid to do right now, especially those who actually have power. It's sad. Write to us, otw@2600.com. We'd love to hear your viewpoints, whether it be on gardening or on the craziness going on around us. Kyle, it's been a pleasure, as always. Let's go back into the garden for another week.
Yeah, I don't even know why I showed up. I mean, I had so much to do out there.
Well, it's still light outside.
You're welcome.
Bye.
Yeah, we have to dig those holes.
Good night.
See ya.
What holes?
I was standing by the tower. I was keeping out of sight while the children on the avenue sang the hymns to the night. There she comes around the corner. Here she comes at half past 11, gliding slowly down the gleaming streets. And we know that this is heaven. Just an ordinary night. Just an ordinary night. Just an ordinary night.
Just an ordinary night. Just an ordinary night. Just an ordinary night. Share of bad luck. That's why I've lived so long. Tried to hold it all together, but in the air I heard a song. It said to stay with me till morning. Cold eyes blinking, acid lights. I can't remember how I lost you. Now I lost your number in a fight. Just an ordinary night. Just an ordinary night. Just an ordinary night. Just an ordinary night.